ready to roll.
We may need to upgrade to DEFCON 3. Hello, this is Brian Scuttle, the musical movie critic, to my right. Ronnie Haynes, to his right.
Hey, Mouth.
This is Yahoo's with Microphone, here with the commentary on Independence Day, the huge 1996 blockbuster, highest-grossing movie of 1996. Probably one of the most
deservedly so.
Yeah, deservingly so. So it's a good popcorn flick, as we'll discuss over the next.
A movie that came out at right around the same time, Twister, had a very similar opening.
Yeah,
I've noticed.
About a couple months after, and actually it was much more eagerly anticipated than Twister.
Yeah.
Right from the Super Bowl promo, which really blew a lot of people away because of the.
I think what really sold people in the trailers and the TV spots was the image of the White House destroyed and everything. That was like,
well, right now we have
the
pretty impressive image in itself.
The quote-unquote money shot, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. This in itself is a pretty impressive shot. It's probably one of the better openings I think I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Most definitely.
Really, really... lures you into the possibilities of what this movie could be.
Puts more
and
of a
really quite haunting. Great,
yeah, very haunting.
Great,
yeah, very well done.
Great opening music by David Arnold.
Puts more of an emotional grounding to the beginning of the movie than you would expect. I think with your usual popcorn.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, this image tells you a lot right here.
Mm-hmm. So. And I mean, this image, if you as what was said on the director and producer commentary done by Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin, obviously inspired by the beginning of Star Wars, with the ship hovering overhead.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars, as we'll point out many, many times, was a huge influence on this film, in terms of some of the shots and what have you. And this film is no worse for it. It's very loving homages, if you can find them.
Mm-hmm.
This
is just great foreshadowing right here with the REM song. I love that.
Yeah,
I guess it got such a good laugh too.
It's a funny story. They were originally going to Everybody Wants to Rule the World. I actually heard in one of the previews, but they were able to get the rights from REM to do It's the End of the World as We Know It, and it just worked. Yeah, you said, it got a big laugh when, I mean, this was one of those movies where, this was one of the first movies I really remember where the audience just really got into it, really got into some of the funny little touches, the comedy, and, you know.
Yeah, we're not even into the stuff that people truly. Yeah.
Yeah. This guy was in Stargate. That guy apparently is mistaken a lot of times for Dean Devlin, but it's not. They mentioned that in the commentary. Actually, a pretty good commentary. That was surprisingly interesting.
Now, this movie came out before Contact, didn't it?
Yes, it did, a year before Contact. And Contact came out in 97. yeah.
But this all gives it, you know, I've heard Spielberg talk about science fiction and that, you know, everything in science fiction needs to be based in science.
Yeah.
And this gives the science fiction story and a reality to it all.
Right.
Yeah.
You know that would actually be happening. And in a lot of films, you don't even see that, but you know that would be happening.
Yeah. Right? And the thing is, the movie does not begin focused on, you know, the main characters and the heroes and everything. At first, you're just seeing all these minor characters that give the story a weight to it all, because it kind of gives it a worldly feeling, like this is affecting more people than just the heroes. It's affecting everyone.
Right.
Yeah, which is very, very important. One of the things that's I've always found impressive about this film is how, I mean, it just dives into it, and it really doesn't slow down in terms of pace. I mean, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes, but it flies, I think. I mean, it just flies by just headlong throughout this story, and it's really, I mean, it's really one of the more underrated popcorn flicks by
Robert
Loggia. Yeah.
Make him! Then lick him.
Okay. But, really hot wife.
Yeah.
Mary McDonald from Dances with Wolves. Bill Pullman from Spaceballs and While You Were Sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a bunch of other stuff. Actually, him and Robert Loggia, both in Lost Highway, the David Lynch film, shortly after this.
Bill Pullman's played some pretty... I've seen dark stuff prior to preceding this.
Yeah. The present here, I think kind of, sort of inspired a little bit by Clinton, you know, as far as the youthfulness of him necessarily, and not so much, you know, what most people remember Clinton for, although right. that little knowing line that's like, I have a, you know, I'm sitting next to a younger net here. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's doesn't exactly work well, but anyway, Margaret Colling as
some pretty strong female roles in this film.
Yeah, very underrated writing just in general by Devlin and Emmerich. And one of the things they mention is, you know, I like how they don't necessarily give away everything about the characters immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, when you see him, you don't... I mean,
no, you don't know that he's the president.
That he's the president, but you don't know when you first see him in the movie.
Again, it gives a
kind of... You don't know Margaret Collins' relationship to...
With Jeff Goldblum.
Or Jeff Goldblum. This was one of the more impressive
shots. Is that the Hubble right there? Is that supposed to be the Hubble?
I don't think so.
That it's supposed to be the Hubble, just... Sort of setting up the idea that the satellites are sort of getting destroyed.
And it's certainly not that small.
Yeah. Would a satellite make a big explosion like that, though, if it, like, collided with...
I don't think so.
That was kind of like...
I mean, you know, you're always going to have explosions in space.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be happening.
Now, here we have the great Jeff Goldblum and the great...
Judd Hirsch. Who actually is not that old. Apparently, they put him in... quite a bit of makeup, I think, to make him look like he could be Jeff Goldblum's father. Yeah. I mean, you know...
Well, he could be Jeff Goldblum's father without the makeup, I think.
Well, I mean, those of you who know him, I mean, know him from, obviously, Taxi.
Beautiful Mind. I loved Judd Hirsch in A Beautiful Mind.
Oh, that's right. It wasn't Beautiful Mind, huh?
Wasn't he in a sitcom?
He was in a couple sitcoms. He was in Taxi.
Taxi.
And Dear John.
Dear John. That's
Dear
what
John.
I used to watch that all the time.
Dear John.
Yes.
Gosh.
Right. I think of that name.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park, Cronenberg's The Fly. And,
Lost World. Yeah.
They really have a good rapport. And apparently a lot of this was sort of improvised between them. And that's... You know, I mean, Jeff Goldblum's one of those guys that, I mean, he's a character, but he's an entertaining. He's a very entertaining.
What I kind of think is refreshing about the Jeff Goldblum and Judd Hirsch father-son relationship is, like, it's not estranged, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like that cliche father-son relationship you see in every other movie. It's like they're not estranged from each other, you know? They're not, like, fighting over some petty thing that started, like, 50 years or, you know, 15 years ago or something like that, and, you know, and when, you know, I just thought that was kind of refreshing, and you know, it's just, you know, because I don't think there'd be any time for something like that in a movie like this. I don't think, you know, and I think the filmmakers were smart enough to acknowledge that there isn't enough time, and, you know, and there are a couple subplots that, thanks to some lucky editing, you know, were taken out and made a movie. You know, if you watch the special edition director's cut version, you'll notice that there are some subplots that were taken out, but you are kind of grateful that they were, because they really did take away from the momentum, I think, of the story. Hmm. And I think the story has an emotional weight all its own without any really corny subplots. We should
mention right now the movie they're watching is The Day the Earth Stood Still, the classic Robert Wise science fiction film.
Mm-hmm. Homage.
Yeah.
We have a Now, who's this guy, Brian?
The actor?
Yeah, the actor.
I honestly don't know.
Doing a really, yeah.
Gosh, he seems so familiar, though.
Doing a really bad impression of Keanu Reeves.
Right. And here we have the introduction of Randy Quaid's character.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps, if there's one questionable performance in the entire movie, I think you have to look at Randy Quaid's, although...
I liked Randy Quaid.
I like Randy Quaid in the movie, but the fact of the matter is, it's, this isn't a far from like, say, the Vacation movies.
Uh-huh.
You know, which is kind of disappointing, because...
Well, he does what he does well.
Yeah.
You know? And I guess you could say he picks his role.
I mean, but. Perhaps... You know, it just seems to me that sometimes it's a bit over the top, a bit too over the top, like in, you know, like, oh, look at me, I'm a drunk and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know.
I think
sometimes it doesn't work for me, but I mean, I do get caught up in his story.
Right.
So.
What? No, you're fine. You're
well, I thought you had something to say.
No. It's just surprised that it was over top, but I never felt it was over the top. I felt that, you know, he was pretty decent. And how he played, you know, kind of the drunk, but mm-hmm. he was still able to, you know, talk and communicate with people, you know.
Yeah.
So I for me, it wasn't over the top.
Yeah, he wasn't Dudley Moore over the top
right.
or anything like
of
that.
Of course, I mean, you know, you take into the fact that this is basically an homage to the 1950s science fiction movies, the 1950s cliched, mm-hmm. cheesy science
right,
fiction
right,
movies.
Right.
I mean, you know...
Well,
a popcorn flick through and through. It's not supposed to be taken too seriously.
I've heard Dean Devlin, though, acknowledge in his commentary that, you know, it's an homage to, yes, it's an homage to the 50s science fiction movies, but it's also very much an homage to the 70s disaster films.
Yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. I mean, there's definitely that homage to, it just happened to be a science
That's
fiction
mm-hmm.
premise.
We haven't even gotten to the disaster part yet.
No.
Actor's name?
Oh, God. The James...
The minister of defense?
Yeah.
Secretary of defense.
Excuse me.
James Rebhorn, I believe.
Okay.
He is in Meet the Parents as well. And I know a bunch
he,
of
he played,
stuff
he played the pre- He actually played the president in Rocky and Bullwinkle. You heard that correctly, didn't he?
I repress as much information as possible.
I just think that was funny that he played the Secretary of Defense in Independence Day, and he played the actual president in Rocky and Bullwinkle. Which, I mean, yeah, I try to forget that movie whenever I can myself, but just this is kind of like one of those moments where you kind of like, geez,
dang,
yeah,
you really get sort of how big this is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
And you hope it doesn't get stupid
yeah.
at the same time. You know, the first time you're saying... I mean, hopefully...
We should say, not the Iraqi desert.
Mm-hmm.
Even if this were made today, probably still wouldn't be the Iraqi desert.
No, I don't think the filmmakers would have come back if...
No. This is in, like, Nevada.
This was done in a water tank, I think.
Yeah, like a cloud tank or something.
Cloud tank,
like that,
yes.
Whatever.
Water
they call
tank.
It something.
Cloud. No, I think cloud tank is the...
And right here, they filmed this on the set of Crimson Tide.
Oh.
Got
yeah.
on the set for, like, a day. And actually, the president's... The White House sets were used in the American president and subsequently Mars Attacks,
mm-hmm.
which actually came out the same year.
And yeah, I've actually heard a lot of people accuse Mars Attacks of being a parody of this movie,
when in fact it was essentially the same thing, just
much
more darkly comic
mm-hmm.
homage to 50s sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, we should make that clear. I mean, as far as
I thought, Mars Attacks was pretty entertaining for what it was worth. I mean, it wasn't classic Tim Burton, but it was.
Well, for me, it was one of those things where I liked it at first, but then the more I thought about it, the more it just didn't work for me. I'm not dismiss it completely, but
mm-hmm.
it's just
no, it's not. It's
terribly
not. It's
good.
Not. It's not Edward Scissorhands or or the original. Anyway.
What I find interesting here is that, you know, you have the White House staff watching the TV to see what's happening, you know.
Yeah, they're not quite sure either.
Yeah, that is pretty funny.
You think they'd be, you know, you think they'd be the first people to know, but, you know, they're actually looking to see what's going on.
Thanks for bringing this back to the movie, by the way, Dave.
Yes.
That was a nice little touch there.
We were almost going to go on a Tim Burton tangent.
Yeah, we were, but
Dave saved us. Planet of the Apes.
Dave brought us back to to the movie
We can do that on Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, exactly. We can go to town on Planet of the Apes.
All right, we're already going to town.
Okay, anyway, back to Independence.
Now, this is...
AWACS.
Woo!
Yeah. Yes, my boy. Well, probably not that version.
Now,
No. This is just a pretty suspenseful scene.
Yeah,
you don't even know what's going to happen, and you kind of have your first.
Well, one of the things that's good that they acknowledge on the commentary is that, you know, you just see them get engulfed in the clouds.
Right.
It's not necessarily an implication that these guys are bad.
Right.
It's just they happen to be too close to the ship.
Yeah.
I mean, bottom line is. And so, I mean, that's actually...
This could be friendly little fire.
Yeah.
It
could be an accident. Could be something else.
Could be a quote-unquote incident. An international incident.
I need to get something to drink. I'll be back in a minute. It's nothing against this part. It's just that I'm thirsty.
Okay. Yeah, so Bill Pullman, Bill Pullman, I think he's gotten a lot of flack for this role for some reason, you know, just because he tried to play it so straight that, that he got a little bit more flack for this role than I think he deserved.
I would have to agree with that.
Because he just tried to play it so straight arrow that, you know...
I mean, he's one of those people. His performance reminds me, in a good way, of Morgan Freeman's performance as present in Deep Impact. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one of those guys you just... The conviction of his performance just really grounds it in, you know, he's not... He's just an American like everybody else. I mean, mm-hmm. He's very grounded. It's not like he's talking down to everybody.
All right, that's probably part of the part of the criticism that this movie originally received is that, you know, none of the characters had a real edge to them. I don't think, you know, none of them had. I think that was part of like what a lot of the critics for the most part were not crazy about this movie, and you know. I mean, the more I think about it, you know, I can. The more I can see it, because you know there wasn't enough character development, and I can see that on a couple levels, you know, like, you know, none of the characters really had. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, first of all, most critics aren't huge fans of popcorn flicks to begin with, and they can't differentiate those from, you know, more serious fare in terms of criticism. Harvey Firestein, we should mention, where I believe on Independence Day, as well as the Simpsons commentary when he was a guest star, both of them acknowledge that he's got the best voice in Hollywood. there's no better voice.
So if I smoked a whole bunch of cigarettes, I would have the best voice anyway.
Probably not, but...
This is the same.
Anyway, I think I have a pretty sexy voice now. So,
Ron, please, I'm trying to make a point here. Going back to Bill Pullman for a bit, yeah, admittedly he is a bit idealistic as a president. I mean, he's not. I mean, I don't think we've ever. You know, I think he's probably the most idealistic. He's our idealistic version of a president.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a president should be, of course. This being a movie, chances are that's what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. You rarely get the more cynical version.
Yeah, like, we get the corrupt president.
Primary's colors is an excellent example of that. But
President Rocky and Bullwinkle wasn't all that great either.
Yeah. But yeah, this scene always did get a laugh because they were making fun of him for claiming he was abducted by aliens
and sexually.
And it's like
that guy's delivers.
That's obviously that shadow there that was processed, I think. A lot of the shadows are some of the, it's a little bit of mix and match. Some of them are processed, some of them are actual shadows over models. More cloud tank effects.
Yeah. And obviously one of the huge influences on this is War of the Worlds.
Right. Process.
In terms of the story. Very much War of the Worlds. First time we see Will Smith here, 20 minutes into the movie, we're just now seeing who many people would probably consider the real star of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily the hero of the movie.
Not the hero.
The thing is, he's the only reason he's going to be revered as the hero is because, you know, he's the biggest badass of them all.
Yeah.
You know, just.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where actually, if you think about it, it's sort of reminiscent of Ghostbusters, where, no, you don't have one single hero. You have a trio of heroes who contribute in their own way.
It's actually like a quartet of heroes. I think it's like, it's the president.
The president, Jeff Goldblum, Will Smith,
and Randy Quaid.
Oh, yeah, and Randy Quaid
is definitely one of the heroes in this movie.
Yes, he is.
I think that's a model.
I apologize.
See, I'm good for something.
Is that Bill Pullman with James Earl Jones, I think? Great shot of the Twin Towers.
Right.
Yeah. Some of this is kind of sobering to watch post 9/11, but
it is.
There's one shot in particular that's just really depressing after 9/11 that sort of takes away from the enjoyment of
this movie.
This movie would not have been made after 9/11, or
it would have been interesting.
It would have been hard to make after.
It'd have been interesting to see what the response had been post 9/11.
Yeah. Well, apparently what I've heard is, I mean, you know, people were just, you know, going after 9/11, I mean, people were getting stuff like this and True Lies and stuff like that running, and I think a big part of it is, I mean, in those movies you basically see the bad guys get their asses kicked, which I think is a big part of their appeal, and certainly the appeal of this movie. Right here, we should.
Yeah, that's
there's God. There's some great shots of this. Yeah, I just absolutely love these shots.
Oh,
in here.
Shoot!
Anyway,
oh,
damn. Have you ever seen the Murray's V? Dave?
Oh yeah, it's fantastic right there.
Yeah,
my family's obsessed with that.
Unfortunately, I've never watched it, but
oh really?
I've seen shots of the spaceships, and these are obvious, very much influenced by it.
Yeah, V. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it.
It's one of those ones I've
seen. Dave, some black people.
Well, there's some black people in
there. Well, you got Will Smith, too.
Yeah.
And, come on. And Vivica A. Fox.
Vivica A. Fox. That's Vivica A.
Yeah.
Is this her first
big role? This was her first big role. Yeah. This is the one that. She was in Set It Off
later
this year, but this was the one that pretty much put her on the map.
Right.
And deservingly so. I mean, she's very good in
I
the
like
movie,
this line.
She's
right
actually
here.
Given quite a few good, very good performances. I mean, Set It Off is one, and I believe she was in Soul Food. That's another one.
That's good.
Will Smith. 6 degrees of Separation, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Men in Black, obviously. My favorite performance of his.
Men in Black, yeah.
Cool wraps off.
The Bad Boys movies. Second one's...
I am not enthusiastic about Bad Boys 2, because I wasn't crazy about the first one.
It's
so.
The PNC.
I love the look on his face right here.
Yeah,
it was moving out. A little shake nigga running. Love his pants there.
He's just got, I mean, you can tell right here he's got
walking charisma.
I mean, yeah, he's basically charisma personified. But one of the things I was going to say is the movie I'm actually more looking forward to him in, not so much. Oh yeah, he was in Ali too. God, how could I forget that? It was Oscar enough for it.
His first Oscar enough.
Yeah. I'm not so much like you. I'm not so much looking forward to Bad Boys 2, the one I'm really looking forward to seeing him in is actually going to be next summer, Our Robot, which is based on the Asimov stories, directed by Alex Proyas, director of The Crow in Dark City.
Oh, wow.
So I'm looking forward to that one. I love this. The way he plays this is just perfect. I mean, it's like, huh? What's going on? And then you see the helicopter, and I was like, damn.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay. All right, I see now. Nobody notices it until...
Jaws! Oh, sorry.
Bless you.
Yeah.
So Jeff Goldblum plays the smartest, the coolest laid-back smart guy.
he plays the coolest geeks in Hollywood. Yeah, I mean, he really does. He's in this and the Jurassic Park movies. I mean, he's just cool.
Mm-hmm. That would get to laugh.
Yeah. Why did I just send my mom to Atlanta? Okay, maybe Firestein's performance is a bit over the top.
Well, you know, I think all the performances are, you know, intentionally or unintentionally, you know.
Yeah.
Just you know, because I think you know the filmmakers encouraged them to, you know, have fun with this.
Yeah.
Whenever they could.
I'm not necessarily criticizing the movie when I'm saying that. I mean, I kind of am. I enjoy the movie. I don't enjoy the movie less because of them. I gotta call my lawyer. Oh, forget my lawyer. That's what most of us would say.
What do we think of prior and preceding Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich films?
I've never seen Universal Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
I think Stargate is underrated.
I think Stargate was kind of enjoyed it. I mean,
it's not a great science fiction film, but it's a good one. Mm-hmm. It's a good adventure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just thought
a very interesting premise to it.
Godzilla.
Yeah.
It has a classic money shot of the main protagonist in a taxi driving off Godzilla's tongue, which is just sheer absurd genius. The rest of the movie is pretty sorry. The Patriot I actually really like.
Yeah, The Patriot
is
actually really
a bit I mean, yeah, it's perhaps a bit too melodramatic,
mm-hmm.
but, and, you know, I mean, Braveheart, yeah, Saving Private, you know, it doesn't compare to Braveheart, which, I mean, is an obvious has obvious similarities to, but I still really enjoy it. Of course, Mel Gibson's one of my favorite actors, so
mm-hmm. I felt as if, you know, most Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin movies prior and preceding to Independence Day have been mediocre at best. You know, I mean, you know, there are two people, you know, they've acknowledged before that, you know, they're not out to make high art.
Yeah.
They're out to, you know, entertain. And I can appreciate that about them being able to, but they canceled it.
I think this movie is a little more mediocre. I mean,
this is my favorite of them.
Very.
No, I'm saying that this is their least mediocre film.
Yeah.
This is
I love how you can see it right out there. It's like, yeah, that's why. One of the things they mentioned in their commentary when they talked about Vivica A. Fox, which I never really thought about until they said it, but is really a very smart thing in terms of character development, is the fact that you meet her before you find out she's actually a stripper.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because if you are introduced to her as a stripper, that's how you're going to think of her throughout the entire movie.
Right.
You're basically
undressing her with your eyes until you get to the stripper scene.
Yeah.
But
but since you've already introduced her as a character who you think is going to be a big part of this, and as, you know, Will Smith's girlfriend in a very concerned girlfriend, I mean, you know, you have a little more sympathy for her character and what she goes through in this movie. I think unconsciously. But I mean, right here, I wanted to mention the just really beautiful theme here written by David Arnold that plays over this. And it's one of the better themes of the movie. I mean, there are only really two big themes. Big themes in this movie as far as musically goes, but
I mean, I've always said if you have a great theme, run into the ground.
And he does it brilliantly, and he doesn't just put, not necessarily the same way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I mean.
That's a great theme.
That's a little.
That could have been disastrous if it was loaded. But probably wasn't.
That's a little dysfunctional family moment there.
Yeah.
Your dad answers the door with a shot with a 12 gauge. Well, not a 12 gauge, a pump action, I guess.
She's
right.
Like, what,
30-something?
Probably. I don't know.
But I think that was an intentional running gag of Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich's is to have a president who is incapable of lying.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a little social commentary.
There are a couple sort of running gags. One of them was kind of hampered by editing. But you get wind of in the special edition where later on you see that everybody's telling Jeff Goldblum not to touch anything.
Yeah.
This is another part that is sort of slightly improvised, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
it works really. These two really work together.
They work.
I mean, you can see them as father and son, and you can see them having a blast with these scenes.
Foreshadowing.
Sure.
This
is one of those things where it's like, I mean, it's intentionally over the top because,
right.
I mean, sort of saying above is like, you know, always paranoid. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Stuff like that. It's funny.
Now that little piece.
This part always got a laugh in the theaters.
I never thought it was that funny. Actually,
they already established.
I thought the whole drunken redneck got changed.
Just that use of sexually.
Just
always got a laugh.
But I mean, you know, the whole redneck. You know, thing that just kind of like threw me off. I was kind of like, okay, this is winking.
This
back.
Always kind of got
if there's, if there's any
too.
If there's
it's
any
like,
winking back
it's
to the
your last night on Earth. You don't want to die virgin,
because everybody's thinking about it.
Yeah.
I've actually used that line before, and it doesn't work.
See, there's the older brother look.
Yeah.
Touch my sister, you die. It's a classic look. We have to learn that. Yeah.
Yeah, this is where some really clever editing happens, and we don't catch wind of the younger son being sick subplot, which I'm very thankful that we don't.
Yeah, admittedly, that one will have hampered this quite a bit.
That would have
stayed in. And you don't. I mean, you sort of get wind of the fact that there's not a whole lot of.
But you know, if you had the sick son and you had the drunken father, and that would just be
like
too much. Too much.
Harry Connick Jr. here. And I know they mentioned somebody else on the commentary.
Matthew Perry was.
That's
Matthew
right.
Perry originally
Perry,
was.
Whose father is actually still in this, but he ends up dying, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the first ladies. I think he's one of the first ladies. No, that's somebody
I think
else.
He is with. No, I think he is part of the first lady security.
That's what I thought. I can remember.
You need to get some serious booty.
See, I like the one knee approach. Harry Connick Jr. just plays this so well. I mean, he really does. You know?
That's the ugliest ring in the world, too. I mean, the ugliest. You could not give that to a girl. I mean, he's just good.
Well, she had a thing for Dolphin.
Yeah. But not that. She certainly didn't have that thing in mind. These guys have some pretty decent chemistry too.
Yeah, not everybody in this movie really does. Yeah, I mean,
okay, moan of silence.
Yeah, she's pretty hot.
Yeah,
she is pretty hot. Was she originally a model?
I
just don't know her.
I would guess, yeah.
I mean, I mean, she's almost half of that body.
Kind of looks like Sigourney Weaver, actually.
Yeah.
More editing here. There's some little bit of a subplot taken out here as well, which I'm
kind of grateful for. I mean, and it did have actually an inside joke.
Who edited this movie, Brian?
Who did edit this movie? Let's look. David Brenner.
Okay. See, I was, I'm just, ever since I saw the director's cut version, I've referred to this as just lucky editing, because I mean, there could have been some really painful, love scene from episode 2 type moments here. I really do feel strongly about that.
One of the things that was cut is the fact that she gets fired from her job as a stripper, and it's like, it's not necessary. I mean, it's an inside joke with the filmmakers, but because the boss's name is Mario. And
Brian or Dave, can you do this on your laptop?
I just want to mention one thing about the laptops is that Apple always seems to pay big money to get their laptops in movies, and somewhere in this movie, he's working on a laptop.
Favorite line.
Favorite line coming up. he's got a laptop. It's got like a piece of tape on it that says Macintosh. So I mean, it's not even an Apple, but he's got a piece of tape on it. So that's just terrible.
I like this line. Yeah, all capable repairman can pops. Of course, now if we were seeing this, it wouldn't be the McLaughlin Group. It'd be like Fox News.
Oh, yeah. Good point. How'd you get this number?
I'm looking for... In case you can't tell, I've seen this a few times.
I like hearing Judd Hirsch and Jeff Goldblum like just muttering over the phone.
Yeah.
it's like, are they going to lose that? Are they going to lose that? That great Jewish father act.
Perhaps a bit of a stereotype, but... There are a few stereotypes in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now
this is originally one of those helicopters that they fly over forest fires.
Yeah. It wasn't an. It's not an actual military helicopter. Actually, funny thing. Well,
is this not an homage to Close Encounters?
There's a lot of close encounters, it seems to me, in the movie, especially in this part.
Mm-hmm. Trying to communicate with the lights.
That's just so stupid. That's what those human beings think.
Yeah.
A little too great.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of science fiction movies in this. Close Encounters, obviously.
You get into some Alien later on.
Yeah.
I'm the
president at the time.
I will say there is a rather painful scene between Judd Hirsch and Jeff Goldblum that was cut here, thankfully.
Yeah. You punched the president?
Oi!
here we go.
Yeah.
To die. And so stupid.
Hey, look, Dave, a black guy. Anyway.
Echo 1. Empire Strikes Back. Sorry. I don't know. I've been coughing a lot recently.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Allergies.
Dad, what? What?
Now, this is some pretty decent exposition right here.
Yeah.
It's pretty entertaining.
Of course, the last line you hear is one of the biggest cliches in action movie but history.
I compare this scene very closely to the scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark explaining quite exactly what the Ark is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For some reason, I'm reminded of that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
With
the chalkboard and everything.
I can see that. I don't know if I necessarily put it on that level.
No, I'm sure. I mean, I wouldn't either, but for some reason I'm always reminded of that scene.
Because
there are so few scenes in movies like this with exposition that's actually entertaining.
Yeah.
And interesting to watch. Yes. And
the clock is ticking. One of the biggest cliches in movie going history. Yeah.
But
I mean, it they fit it in pretty well, so you didn't even notice it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of hard
to miss.
But I mean, it kind of just flowed in there.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bump.
Think the black guy's going to make it, Dave?
Yeah. I'm not
not these black guys.
My daughter.
Here's where David Arnold really pumps it up in terms of action music. Big orchestral score. This is actually one of the best scores from 1996.
Mm.
I've always thought so. Yeah, you're gone.
This is a response right here, all right. I'm sure there were some white guys in there too.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I don't think you have to.
The band went to the ground. It's digging it even deeper into the ground.
It's like I said with episode 2, it's a running gag, which I'm sure has already slowed down to a crawl.
It slowed down to a crawl a couple of times ago.
Yeah. But we have our own phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ticking time bomb element of this.
Yeah,
now that you mentioned, seem kind of like a.
I mean, it's manipulated really well, as far as suspense goes. I mean,
this is the scene I can relate to the most: is sitting in traffic and thinking like your impending doom.
Anybody who lives in Atlanta can relate to that.
Yeah.
Or has had to drive down to Atlanta in rush hour. Mm-hmm. It can relate to that. I mean,
the idiots continue. Yeah. On top of the building, she's really hot too. Does anybody know who she is?
She actually does seem familiar. I know she's been in other stuff. I just don't remember what.
How obvious is it that we don't do our homework here?
Yeah, sorry, we didn't exactly do a good job with homework in this one.
Can we move it along,
Dr. Katz? Apparently, Harvey Fierstein had just done a voice cameo on the
animated
Dr. Katz animated show on Comedy Central, and that was sort of a reference towards that.
Yeah, get the hell out of there.
Yeah, we want to move.
Yeah. The IBM building. IBM building is going to be one of the first to know.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know, is that a little.
They actually did an excellent parody of. These upcoming disaster scenes on Futurama in early episode. I mean, they just did an it's very short parody, but it's very funny. Where the crew goes to Monument Beach, and you see all these monuments from the planet Earth all on one beach. And the obvious one with the White House. It's really quite funny. Especially the capper. But in the considerable distance.
Is that in the first season?
It's on the Volume 1 DVDs, but it actually aired in the second
season. We may have to watch that then. So you can. Yeah, this is actually some quite brilliant model work here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is some really
great lighting,
really brilliant model.
I mean, this is one of those things where it's very much like, and the lighting, so, the use of green actually is sort. You could kind of see as an anybody who's seen the Byron Haskin version of War of the Worlds from the 50s.
I love the color cover of Mad Magazine that came out just after the movie was released, and had a picture of the UFO over the White House, and all these guys running around in the White House lawn with they had all wet their pants, and they called it Independence Day.
Anyway.
Look how large that laptop is. Apple would not be doing that today.
Time's up.
This is impressive effects. I mean, these deservingly won the Academy Awards.
Hey, once you start seeing a bunch of electricity at the top of your head, I mean, wouldn't you be running away from
that? I think. Now, which building is this? This is Los Angeles.
That was Los Angeles.
What building is that? Is that a prominent building? I mean, because, like, the explosion starts with in Washington, it starts with the White House. In New York, it starts with the Empire State Building.
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing they're one of the visual effects guys.
Right there.
Wanted a cameo, and he ended up being incinerated right off the bat.
Which is, you know.
Some of these cars were real.
Those all look pretty real to me.
Now we have the Empire Strikes, or Empire
what?
State Building. Sorry.
What? Brian?
Got confused a minute. Different science fiction movie.